Welcome to Artsiety, the podcast exploring contemporary art. If you are curious to know more about the influence of contemporary art in our society, Artsiety is the podcast for you. I am Camille Poirot. I will be your host for this third and final episode of 100 Years of Artivism, our mini-series dedicated to the link between art and activism. Our first two episodes dealt with artivism and authoritarian regimes, and artivism without borders. In our third and final episode, we will focus on artivism as a voice for minority identities. We welcome back Cynthia. Hi.
Hi, thank you very much.
Louise, hi.
Hello, thank you.
And Sarah for this episode.
Hi, great to be back.
Thank you for listening to Artsiety.
And now I'm really happy that I'm not where I used to be before. I'm still a baby, but the important thing is that I'm no longer where I used to be. A lot has changed. During those times, during those years, a lot has really changed. And I see that now I have a brighter future and vision for myself than before.
The 25th of November was the International Day of the Elimination of Violence Against Women. We're heading to Congolese women and their example of artivism with Cynthia. Cynthia, how is dance another form of voice for women in Congo?
Well, Kemi, I can say that dance can be used as a therapy for these women in Congo because more than 4 million people were displaced in Congo because of conflict in 2022, according to the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center. And so survivors and aid workers say that displacement rips people from their livelihoods and leaves women and girls vulnerable to assault. And so rape is used as a weapon of war in Congo by militias and soldiers to scare away populations and control natural resources such as coltan, which is used in our smartphones, even in the microphones that we're using right now and on the computers. And so because of that essential material, lives are being torn apart and women and girls are losing their dignity. And so because of that, Boliwa Sabourin, who is French-Congolese, and Dr. Denise Mukwege, who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner and Congolese gynecologist, created the association and project Recreation by Loba. Okay. So recreation, this name indicates the fact of not only making something that makes you happy, like dancing or singing, but also the fact that you recreate your self-esteem and you regain self-esteem after what you have been through. And Loba in a Congolese language, which is Lingala, means express yourself. And so they created this association in 2016. And their goal is to repair women victims of trauma, whether they're sexual, gender-based violence, HIV survivors, or even immigrants, like the woman who was talking in the audio. She's an immigrant and she has suffered a lot. But thanks to dance, she was able to survive. And they also organize workshops around masculinity to rethink the place of men right. in society. Yeah.
And very quickly, is mm-hmm. this specific to Congo or is it somewhere else in the world maybe?
Well, so it was created in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2016, but because the creator, Boliwa Sabourin, is French-Congolese and he was living in France, he thought that it wasn't only specific to Congolese women, and so he wanted to raise this awareness also in France. So it exists in Congo and also in France as well.
Great. Thank you very much for sharing, Cynthia. Now we're heading to Louise. And with the example of Native Americans, as it was celebrated 2 weeks ago with Thanksgiving, we are seeing that Native American tribes are now rethinking this major holiday out there. And can you explain, like, how is it still crucial for Native Americans' artivism out there?
Well, you were right to mention Thanksgiving, first of all, because it's an American holiday. And to talk about Native Americans is to talk about the history and the origins of the United States as a country. Because as you know, when the British installed colonies in the eastern part of the United States in the 16th and 17th century, they progressively conquered the rest of the United States, going from east to west. And the conquest of these territories was made in harming the Native Americans who occupied these lands before the Americans. So they slaughtered and killed and ripped them of their territories for millions of them. And now there is talk of requalifying this as a genocide. And the United States has taken little to no action on this part of this somber history. This is why Thanksgiving is being very much discussed these past decades. And Native Americans nowadays live for the most of them in reserves. So they are parked in small parts of the territory that they used to own and occupy. And they live in distress and misery, the much more poverty and generally speaking, lesser quality of life for Native Americans in these reserves. And so voices are starting to appear among the Native American communities, especially by artists who want to celebrate the history and the culture of these people by reminding the viewer that they have a form of art, a form of relationship to the earth, a form of culture and history that needs to be seen and heard, and that they're not just victims of a situation.
Great. Thank you for sharing. And do you have any very quickly, like, form of artivism out there? Like, do you have, is it generic to one genre in particular?
It's not generic to one genre in particular. What I think is interesting is the surge of feathers that we are that is beginning to appear. So several artists are creating feathers in the form of the traditional costumes of Native Americans, celebrating the colors that are important to this culture, because, you know, fashion is a form of art as well. And so this is something that we have seen a lot in 2023 in various exhibitions across the United States. And it's a way of owning a discourse in a way.
Great. And do you have like an example for like in cinema, for example, because visuals are very important out there?
An example in cinema would be, for example, the Marlon Brando Oscar acceptance speech. When Marlon Brando was nominated for an Oscar, he declined the Oscar and sent to accept the Oscar Rasheen Little Feather, a Native American woman who denounced the treatment of the Native Americans, and this was in the 1960s. So you can see how much it dates back.
Great. Thank you very much, Louise. And now we're going to go back to Sarah. With the current refugee crisis, we can ask ourselves how refugees do have a voice in artivism. So, Sarah, why is artivism important for refugees?
Well, first, I think it's important to remind everybody what's a refugee. So a refugee is an individual who has fled their country of origin due to well-founded fear of persecution based on race, religion, or nationality or else, and is unable or unwilling to return. And because refugees often face vulnerabilities, marginalization, stigmatization, and in their host countries, and they might not speak the same language as their host country, art is also a tool of communication for them. They can talk about, through art, the challenges they experience as a refugee.
Great. And very quickly, do you have a famous artivist that was a refugee or has worked with refugees maybe?
Yes, I'm thinking about Reza. So he's a very famous French-Iranian photojournalist who has worked extensively, who has extensively covered issues related to refugees and displaced populations. And one exhibition he did was in 2015, where it was called The Dream of Humanity. And it was a gigantic photo exhibition that covered the walls along the banks of the Seine in Paris in 2015. So during what we called the refugee crisis following the Syrian war. So Reza went to a refugee camp in Iraq, which was inhabited by Syrian refugees, children, and he gave children his camera to take pictures of their friends. And those pictures were covered the walls of the banks of the Seine.
Great. So thank you very much. The three of you, the three examples that you just explained, we are seeing like a certain voice emerging and it humanized those minorities. But to what extent do you think artivism humanized those voiceless minorities? Is there a common voice, like, for example, Cynthia, do you think there's a common voice in art that does?
Yes. So in our examples, I can see that there are different ways of expressing yourself as a human being. And art is a great tool for that. Maybe you don't have a political idea behind it, but women in Congo use their bodies to express themselves. Native Americans use the feathers and their clothing also to express their identity. And you, Sarah, just mentioned the fact that taking pictures is humanizing these beings who are seen sometimes as numbers. We talk about all of these waves of migrants that come to Europe, but what about their faces? Can we see them? Can we at least humanize them?
And I want to add on Cynthia's comments about minority identities, artivism being attached to political claims. It's true that for refugees, refugee art is often linked to activism. It's often attached to political claims. But I think we shouldn't reduce refugees to their political activities, or because some people, some refugee, want to be perceived as artivists. They want to make art for the sake of art. So it's not always attached to political claims, although it takes a big place.
Is it the case with Reza, for example?
For Reza, he likes his art has a meaning, has a often linked to political claims, but it's not the case for an Palestinian artist, whose name is Taysir Batniji, and he actually claimed that he was making art for the sake of art, and he rejects the expectations people may have about Palestinian refugee artists. He just want to make his art without any political attachments.
Great. And very quickly, Louise, do you have anything to add? Is there like a common voice for those people?
I think what Sarah just said is really interesting because our podcast is named Artivism. So it's a question of the link between art and politics. And Sarah mentioning that some artists don't even want to be political is also the question of from whose point of view are we standing when we are claiming that this piece of art is political. Is it really the artists themselves that want it to be political, or is it the society around that looks at it from a political point of view?
Yeah, the podcast is called Our Society, not Artivism, but that was okay. and do you think there's like maybe something around Native Americans that you haven't seen, or like something like this, very quickly?
I think in this example of Native Americans, the particular case of Native Americans, the question is also the question of a culture that used to be erased and invisibilized by the dominant culture of the United States. We often speak about WASP, so white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, and the fact that Native Americans are trying to put forward their own culture, their own history, is also a way of celebrating a people that has all of the rights to exist in the United States.
Thank you very much. That concludes our final episode of 100 Years of Artivism. It gives a voice to minorities who are not heard, and it serves the purpose of humanizing them. So thank you, Cynthia, thank you, Louise, and thank you, Sarah, for participating in this final episode. If you have been listening until the end, thank you for sticking with us. See you soon for another series.